I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it. This is Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast, episode number 227 with guest Debbie Reber.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey there, Ass Kickers. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. As always, I am so grateful that you are joining me. Today, we have a special guest. I mean, they're all special in their own way, but Debbie Reber is a friend of mine. Debbie holds a very special place in my heart because, as you will hear coming up, she has a son that has the exact same diagnosis as my son. And when we first got the diagnosis, gosh, it's been 5 years, I think. Debbie was the first person that I called and was like, help me. I don't know which way is up right now. And then also, I know Debbie from the world of writing and publishing. We're here to talk about her book. It's probably like her eighth book or something crazy like that. She's been traditionally published with, you know, big publishers like Penguin and Simon & Schuster. And I hired her when I wrote my first book, when I wrote my first proposal, to help me with that proposal. So anybody, if you are out there and you are looking for a writing coach, please check Debbie out. She's amazing. We're not talking about writing that specifically today. We're talking about her new book, which I'm so excited about. I read it. It's great. We're going to talk about it in just a minute. I do have a couple of announcements. Tomorrow, Thursday at noon Eastern time, how about if you join me on Facebook Live or Instagram Live? I'm going to be, well, if technology is on our side, I don't think Mercury's in retrograde or anything like that. I am going to, at the same time, be on Facebook Live and Instagram Live. You can join me at the handle Your Kick-Ass Life in both of those, on both of those social media platforms. Noon Eastern time, that is 9 Pacific. I'm going to be talking about complaining and pretty much that's all I'm going to tell you. These videos are about 10 minutes long. I used to do these Facebook videos every week for a while, and then I kind of got burnt out on it. But anyway, I'm back. I am excited about it. If you miss it and want to listen to the replay, you can go and do that over on Facebook because Instagram is weird and they only let it stick around for, I think, 24 hours. And it'll also be over on YouTube as well. Same handle, Your Kick-Ass Life. And the retreats, the Daring Way retreats that I've been going on and on about over the last few weeks, they are both sold out. I opened up a second one in September. That one is sold out as well. But here's the thing, you guys. Go over to yourkickasslife.com/retreat and sign up for the waitlist/interest list. So what this is if there is somebody can't come and we have an opening, I will email those people on that list and say, hey, there's an opening. Do you want to come? And then in the spring of 2019, when I open doors for another retreat, you will be the first to know. Both of these retreats sold out really fast, way faster than we were imagining. And I have no doubt that the one in the spring will as well. I actually have 3 people who've already put deposits down because they're like, I want to make sure that I get in. So if you want to be on that interest list or wait list, It does not obligate you to come. It's just, you're just going to be notified. yourkickasslife.com/retreat. And that's all I got to say about that. So let me switch gears here and tell you a little bit about Debbie. Debbie Reber is a New York Times bestselling author and the founder of Tilt Parenting, a website, top podcast, and social media company for parents who are raising differently wired children. Her next book, Differently Wired, Raising an Exceptional Child in a Conventional World, comes out in spring 2018. She currently lives with her son and husband in the Netherlands. And without further ado, here is Debbie. Hello, Debbie.
Hi, Andrea.
I am so excited to have you, partly because you are an actual personal friend of mine, and I just adore you as a person and admire your work so much. So thank you, thank you, thank you for writing this book and taking the time to come and join us today.
Oh, thank you. I love your podcast, and I am so excited to be a guest on it. And yes, I feel the same about you.
Well, I was telling people a little bit about you before we started chatting and a little bit about this book. And I want to start there. And because I don't think I'm making this up, but I kind of remember you and I having a conversation because you've had a career in writing YA books and you know different kind of genre. And I thought I remember you saying years ago that you weren't ready to tell this story, more specifically about Asher and just being a parent of a differently wired child. You weren't ready to tell it publicly. So what brought you to write the book?
You know, when we moved here to the Netherlands, to Amsterdam in 2013, and something in me shifted during that time. I think, you know, that's the point where we made the decision to homeschool Asher, to pull him out of school. We took this big leap of faith in completely changing our lifestyle and our environment, you know, to moving to another country. And it just felt like it was time to let go of the old, mm-hmm. and including, you know, this path I had been, you know, down for many years, as you said, doing YA work and teen advocacy work, which I still feel passionate about. But it just felt like this is time. I'm in this transition. I'm going to be doing all this work on myself. And I want to share that journey with other people. And something just clicked. It felt like it was time. And I didn't make the decision right away. We had been here maybe a year, and I started, you know, just really discovering more about how to support Asher and also doing a buttload of work on myself. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I was ready. I just knew it was time. Mm-hmm.
And I know that one of the reasons I love this book and whom I'm recommending it to is because I felt like, and you remember, I mean, you were one of the only people when we got the diagnosis about our son. I think he was five, so that would have been in 2012. I think it was right before you moved. Well, I can't speak for my husband, but I felt like obviously overwhelmed with everything because, and this is something I want to talk about later, because I just kind of feel like we get thrown into what's next, you know, and resources, and here's what you need to do. And I felt like there were so many websites to go to, but there was a lack of kind of concrete mentorship, and just, I wanted something like compact, like someone give me the mm-hmm. right book.
Yeah. We all want that book.
Yeah, we do. And that's who I think that this is for just, you know, obviously anyone who is, whether you are in the middle of raising your exceptional child or you are just starting out. And okay, I want to dive into some of my favorite parts of this book. And a couple of the covers or their topics that you cover are directly parallel to topics that I covered in my last book, like getting out of isolation. And let's just start there, because I'm going to get like too excited and be like, and then talk about this, and then talk about this, tell everybody. So let's just start there. So first of all, why do you think that it happens that we tend to isolate when we are faced with this situation of having an exceptional child?
Well, I think, you know, we start looking around us and suddenly our experience is starting to not be mirrored in any of our, you know, peer relationships. And everyone, I describe it in the book as kind of like a club. Like there's like the cool club, and that's the club we all want to be in, the club where, you know, the guidebook is pretty straightforward and kind of everything is open. We go to the birthday parties and we, you know, mm-hmm. everything kind of progresses in the way that we choose, essentially. And when we start realizing that, wait a minute, we don't have all these options available to us, it can create a division, you know, even subconsciously it creates a division. And I don't think parents of typical kids intend to do this, but we suddenly kind of get kicked out of the club.
Yeah.
And I think that there's embarrassment there. You know, there's certainly a lot of stigma surrounding so many neuro differences that our kids may or may not be diagnosed with, and so we feel very kind of protected. It's like we just want to withdraw just into our little safe place. Mm-hmm. And because we're not sure how other people are going to respond. And so we are, you know, we don't want our kids to be not invited to things or not participate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, suddenly we kind of just go in within our families because we're very concerned about how other people are going to respond to us. And we want to stay secretive because that target on our kids' back, or just there is just so many ideas about what these different neurodiversities mean about who our kids are.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had forgotten about this until you started talking about it, and that feeling like everybody else's kids that are, especially when it's the same age group as your child, they all fit into the box of mm-hmm. how they're supposed to act and, you know, their milestones and things like that. And then I remember when my son was probably 3 or 4, and I remember taking him to the park one day and the park was empty. And I remember feeling so relieved that the park was empty. And mm-hmm. normally I think like parents of like neurotypical kids would probably be a little bit happier when there were other children there for their child to play with. And I remember thinking that's probably a red flag. This was before he was diagnosed, that might be a red flag that something might be wrong, because I had witnessed him over and over again when there were other children there, it not going well with him trying to interact with them. And it just sometimes was a mild disaster. And so, mm-hmm. yes, we can isolate. And then I think for some people, their families might not even be a safe place.
Oh, absolutely. I hear from people all the time that, you know, especially over the holidays or things where there's expectations of a lot of family time. And a lot of people just don't get it, or they think that we're being too lenient as parents, or, you know, because a lot of the ways that these kids respond to the world around them is by doing things that on the outside may look inappropriate, you know, inappropriate behavior. And so sometimes it just becomes easier rather than wanting to explain or defend our parenting decisions. We just kind of close ranks and hang out with people, that small group of people who gets us. And that may only be our partner in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you talk about like the cost of isolation, what that's doing.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
And can you give people just one tip on how to get out of isolation?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, you know, Facebook is such a great resource mm-hmm. for that. And there are so many, you know, safe communities online, and maybe even too many. So it's important to find the community that feels like a match for you. Like, I can't be in groups where people are just venting because for me, that's not helpful, but it's really helpful for other people. You know, if mm-hmm. they have just been through hell, you know, and had a terrible day and they need to unload that and get the props from other people or their support, like, I've been there, hang in there, you know, that can make a huge difference. So that's just even one simple way, is to find your tribe in a forum or in a Facebook group and make sure that you're at least connecting with other parents who know exactly what you're going through.
Yeah. What about letting go of what others think? Because you kind of mentioned that when you were talking about isolation a little bit. And this one is so hard. I think especially when I think we've come a little bit, like, I wouldn't say we've come a long way, but so for instance, if I'm at Target and I see a kid acting out or being loud or throwing a fit and putting his hands over his ears, I think we as parents of these kids that have these non-neurotypical, I don't know, what is the appropriate word nowadays? Like, what are people saying?
You can just say atypical, neurologically atypical, or differently wired.
Differently wired. Okay.
You know.
So being a parent, you know, I tend to be able to spot it. And mm-hmm. I know now, I mean, I can spot it from a mile away, I think. I have so much compassion for them. And I think that I wish that we lived in a world where that was the norm, and I don't think it so much is. But for the people who are going through those times where they are so worried about what people think, what is something that you can share with the listeners? And this is, you know, for any parent, really, because I think even if you have a neurotypical child, they can tend to act out and go against social norms.
Absolutely.
How do we let go of that?
And I will just say that this is a huge one for me. I'm getting so much better at it, and actually living in the Netherlands, which is it's a lovely place, but it is a culture where it's not cool to be different than kind of average. And so I'm really sensitive to looks that I get and mm-hmm. When things are going wrong in public. I think, you know, two things that I would just say. One is to really just start to recognize where you're getting, you know, when you're being triggered, because we bring then so much negative emotional energy to a situation that can make the experience so much worse for our kids and for all of us. And so I think it's really important to, you know, recognize what are the situations where things might happen, and then to proactively plan. For me, you know, so much of it is that deer in headlights thing and being caught off guard. That's when I care the most. But if I have a plan for, you know, I know this is the kind of situation where this could go wrong, here's how I'm going to handle it, you know, then I can just stick to my plan and I don't have to, you know, react. And it's in the reactions that that we tend to make choices that might be throwing our kids under the bus or prioritizing some stranger's comfort over mm-hmm. our own child's, mm-hmm. which, you know, I used to do a lot. And, you know, it's a it's something we have to practice and work on. For me, this has always been one of my biggest things, because I want people to think I'm a rockin' parent, and I'm doing a great job here. And so that judgment from others is really difficult to truly let go of.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that this is like one big trigger for probably everyone listening, and whether it's, letting go of what other people think of you as a parent or as just a human being or as a woman. I think it's a lifelong journey that we're all on. But I love that you plan for things ahead of time. I mean, I'm all for controlling what you can control. So yeah, I love that. There were so many favorite parts of this book, but one of my favorite parts is when you talk about the subtitle is Let Yourself Mourn, and it starts on page 118. I'm going to read part of this. It says, even the most pragmatic of us likely have a vision of what our child's life will look like. Soccer tournaments, piano or dance recitals, debate team, family volunteer vacations, honor roll, homecoming dances. I've no doubt all parents do this, and my hunch is that a majority realize at some point that things are actually going to look quite different from what they thought. Then you go on to say, some might say mourn is too strong a word when referring to letting go of this vision, but I think it fits. I went through this so much and was so disappointed that I felt like people did not create any space for this. And I wrote a blog post about it a long time ago. I think it was called like Dealing with Grief or something like that. And in the couple of people that I decided I could trust to share it with said things like, oh, but he's still the same child. You shouldn't feel that badly about it. And I'm like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. I don't have a more difficult response.
Yeah,
pretty much. And I love that you said that in there, because it's complicated. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah. And, you're exactly right. I think this is something every parent goes through. And I also want to acknowledge that, you can have a neurotypical child who's on honor roll and who goes to prom and all of these things, and they still might end up, on the streets. Like we don't have any guarantees, mm-hmm. and nobody does. And I recognize that. But I feel like for parents raising differently wired kids, we have a lot less guarantees, right? So, and we are reminded constantly mm-hmm. of where our child is not, conforming to, these traditional rites of passage and what a childhood should look like. And I come up against it constantly. It's another biggie for me, having, now a 13-year-old son and just seeing what his social life is like compared to what I know a lot of 13, 14-year-old kids are like. It keeps me up at night. And so much of this is for me, like I have to honor that feeling that I have when it comes up and be kind to it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with recognizing that, it is a loss. It's a loss of a vision that we had. And again, I think all parents experience it, but if we don't give ourselves the permission to experience that, then it's going to fester. It's not going to go anywhere. It's going to stay in us. It's going to result in us putting, ridiculous expectations on our kids. It's going to result in us being seriously triggered every time graduation time comes around and we have to look at Facebook and all these pictures of mm-hmm. who's going off to this university or who, won this sports award or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I think it's important to give yourself the time and tell people to, to fuck off. To
politely move along.
Yeah. Nothing to see here. Yeah.
I just would nod. And I mean, I got met with all kinds of stuff. Like when we first got his diagnosis, I remember I shared it with one girl who was more of an acquaintance, not really a friend. And she said, oh, well, at least he's verbal. And I was like, yeah. I don't even know how to respond to that. Like,
yeah,
I got met with that a lot. And but I think yes to everything you said. And just, I still sometimes go to the playground and I'm always really concerned with how he socially, because that's been one of our greatest challenges is him socializing and social cues and understanding and interacting with other children his age. And he's always interacted really well with children that are a lot younger than him or a lot older than him. It's his, like, his own peer group that he's always seemed to have the most trouble with. And for a long time, he would play near the group of children and sometimes even be playing the same thing they're playing, but with no interaction with any other children. So in his mind, he is playing with them. And sometimes I'd have to, like, ask the teachers when I would ask them, like, what's going on. I'm like, but are you watching? Like, is he actually in the group? Like, so I would have to go and watch. And I remember, like, that feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, watching him. And then I would see the looks that the other kids would give him. And it's like, I just want to crawl out of my skin.
Yeah.
And he might not even notice. A lot of times he wouldn't notice. It was me that was feeling all the feelings.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, how was he in that? I mean, it's the same. This is bringing up our own stuff, right? It's our own, all of our own baggage.
Belonging.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's really, it takes a lot of processing. And again, for me, it's just, it's a daily thing that I have to talk to myself about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every day when I pick him up from school, I have also a neurotypical child who's 8. And so she fits into the box of, you know, of everything quote unquote normal. And I never worry about her with stuff like that. And then of course I have feelings of guilt there too. It's again, complicated, but immediately when they get into the car, I specifically want to know how his day went because I oftentimes never know what I'm going to get. And it's been, I mean, parenting, whew.
Yeah. It is, you know, I say, and again, this isn't a competition. Mm-hmm. And I know parenting is, you know, it's hard for everyone because no matter what we're expecting, we don't get it, whether our kid's atypical or not. But the analogy I use in the book is that we're kind of like the wingsuit flyers of parenting. It's just a little bit more of an extreme sport when you're raising a kid who doesn't fit in.
That's a great analogy. Which brings me to great segue into expectations. You write about this in the book, which I love. So let's talk about expectations. So that we have expectations of our child, and then we have expectations of ourselves as parents. So can you say more about that?
Yes, I can, Andrea.
As a matter of fact,
yeah. Yeah, this is one. I was going to say I really struggled with this one. It probably sounds like these were all things I really struggled with, which I did. So with that, you know, I think, of course, again, same with all parents. We are so hard on ourselves as much as other people judge and things like that. I think we all beat ourselves up because, you know, if we're not patient enough or calm enough or, you know, whatever enough we think we need to be. And this, you know, I think this one's particularly has been tricky for me and for so many parents with atypical kids because our kids can trigger us in such a more intense way. And, you know, we read all the right books and we feel like we're doing all the right things. And then we have this kid that is still coming up against us in a way that we don't expect. And so we feel constantly like we're failing. And that is something we have to just give ourselves a lot of leeway to screw up and to give ourselves permission to start over the next day with a clean slate and not judge ourselves for, you know, not being as evolved or zen about our motherhood journey as we think we should be.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're Amy more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I actually have a story that I've told a couple of times here on the podcast about a particular day that and anyone who parents an exceptional child has probably been to either a meeting at the, some kind of meeting at the school, whether it's an IEP meeting or a 504, that's what they call it here in the States, or something like that. And I probably 95% of the time when I walk away from those meetings have felt like somebody punched me in the face. It just, let's have a meeting to tell you all of the things that are wrong with your child. Like, who wants to go to that meeting? Like, nobody. And you have them several times a year. And so there was one particular really hard meeting that I had gone to. And I think it was one of the first ones that I foolishly told my husband, I'm like, you don't have to take off work for it. I'll just handle it. And then after that one, I was like, I need you to be at every single meeting just for moral support more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so we can walk away together and I could cry on your shoulder. But it was a particularly hard one. I was by myself in the car and I went down the whole rabbit hole of not being a good enough parent. I even was beating myself up for not doing any of the autism walks.
Oh, yeah, right.
But Mom, I did stop myself because I realized what was happening. And I was like, all right, I am doing the best that I can. You know, I felt like I wasn't advocating enough for him. And I'm like, okay, felt the feelings of it's all fear. It's all fear based. And then walked into, okay, what can I do? What can I do today? What can one thing at a time?
Yeah. I mean, when I was really grappling with this, was our first year of living here. And I was, you know, in a new environment and homeschooling a child who at the time was pretty pissed that we had moved here in the first place. So he was not, let's say, a compliant student. And it was one of the darkest periods of my life. And I was working with a parent coach at the time. And one of the things that I kept saying was, I feel like I should, you know, I want to be this like uber zen mama who's like super evolved, like Elizabeth Gilbert. Like, I should be able to do this because I've read all the books. You know, I'm a certified life coach. I know all this stuff. Why can't I just be in this state of, you know, peace? And that was worse. You know, my beating myself up about that was worse than what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And I had to just drop all of that, you know, and things got better when I did, not surprisingly. Yeah.
It's amazing how we make up stories about how, I mean, Elizabeth Gilbert doesn't even have children.
I know. But I imagined if she did, she'd be moving through this beautifully. Yeah.
A lot better than me. Yeah. Well, let's talk about creating space where your child can feel secure. Because I know for a lot of atypical children, they walk around feeling like the world isn't safe, you know, just whether it's sensory stuff or that the world wasn't created for people like them. So can you tell us, like, what would that look like or give us an example?
Yeah, I mean, there's two kind of different ways. There's actually creating a physical space, right, and making sure that they have a place at home where they can retreat and be with their cozy things if they have sensory issues and listen to music that makes them happy or whatever. But more than that, it's creating a world where they can not be in defense mode. You know, and I'm using a word that Danny Rady, who founded Asperger Experts, uses, talking about getting out of defense mode, because so many differently wired kids spend a lot of their time feeling anxious or like they're in fight or flight mode. And it's so critical that they can feel safe and they can let that guard down when they're at home. And that means, you know, not putting pressure on them about stuff. It means being endlessly patient with them, you know, and really just kind of dropping expectations and just fully loving them for who they are, where they are at any given time. And unless we can get to that space and they can feel really secure, they're really going to have a hard time internalizing the developmental lessons, or, you know, just doing that growth that they need to do, that emotional awareness and the maturity and all of those things that we want to see them happen. That's impossible to do if they're feeling defensive, because they just shut down completely. And so, yeah, I mean, it really is making sure that they know we have their backs no matter what, you know, whether we're in public or we're at home, and that they feel safe to come to us with anything. They feel safe to be who they are, and that we're going to love them anyway and help them through that.
That's so huge. And that was really interesting for me to really figure that out, because I think that my experience has been like when I'm getting resistance from my atypical child or pushback or a fit even, I want to push back harder. Like, here's the solution. I'm bigger than you are and louder. And no, this is how it's going to be. What I have found has been helpful is understanding that what you were saying is that feeling of being unsafe, whether it's going out of our normal schedule, which is a trigger for him. He's gotten better, but it is still a trigger. And some days, you know, again, there's no really rhyme or reason. Sometimes it kind of hits us out of nowhere, or sensory issues. I now know what is such a better go-to, and it doesn't work every single time, but it works most of the time, is when we're having some kind of conflict, is that I ask him if he needs a hug. And most of the time, that diffuses the situation. And I don't know if it's – I don't really care what the answer is, but I don't know if it's because he feels safer just because I'm holding him, or if it's the pressure, or if it's something else. But it tends to work for us. And it allows me to slow down too, instead of constantly being in solution mode or being angry, because that can happen, you know. As a new parent, can get impatient.
Really?
Oh, can't you just figure it out?
Yeah. You know, I just interviewed someone for my podcast. He's an educator. His name is Zach Morris. And it's the second time I've had him on. He runs a school in Missoula, Montana, that's focused on nonviolent communication and whole person learning. He's incredible. But we had this amazing conversation about how much time it can take and how patient we need to be to help a child feel secure enough to what he calls transform their worldview, right? Or make the changes that we want to see them happen. And even in talking with him, I noticed how, you know, I'm coaching my kid constantly because I have all these great tools and I want to share them with him. And Zach helped me like reframe my own thinking. And I'm starting to use the question, would you be willing to try X? Would you be willing to, as opposed to, let's do this, or what do you think about this? You know, I'm trying to not solve things for him and let him feel like he's in control and I'm there with ideas when he's ready, so that he can feel ownership of it and not feel like, you know, he's just being barraged with all these things that are really my goals, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having an agenda is what we call that in the coaching world. And I think as parents, it's easy to fall into that. Like, I know what's best. This is going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I actually do that with both of my kids, not just my son, but I do it to my daughter as well. And trust me, there are times where I don't really want to give her a hug when she's just been pissing me off to no end. And I'm about to close the door in her room and I ask her, and again, like 99% of the time she says yes, that she wants one. And it's it can be really, really helpful. I want to ask you one more question before we close. And that is, what do you see is in store for the future for differently wired kids as they grow up? Because we are seeing such an uptick in the stats, you know, and whatever reason that is, that's not really, you know, what I want to get into. But you know, as we're seeing so many more resources for them and it being more accepted, I'm using like quotes over here. What do you see is in store for their future? Maybe like what was different for like our generation?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, just to answer that first part, I think that, you know, certainly when I was in school, in middle school, high school, there was very little awareness of, you know, differently wired ways of being, you know, anything from dyslexia or learning differences, you know, it just wasn't recognized. And, you know, kids were kind of slotted, you know, in this, you know, direction. And I, their potential was really not lived up to in many cases, or they had a big fight ahead of them. But, you know, I mean, my hope is, and what I see happening, and certainly the revolution that I am hoping that Tilt Parenting is a part of doing, is that the world is recognizing more and more the gifts that come with neurodiverse ways of being, you know, whether you are have dyslexia or dysgraphia. And so you can flip images in your head, or, you know, I think engineers are realizing, well, that's a pretty cool thing to be able to do, have that spatial relationship, you know, visual spatial relationship talent. Or certainly, you know, we're seeing more and more businesses that are open to or wanting to hire people who are on the autism spectrum because of some of their attention to detail or user experience or some of the technical expertise that they could bring to it. And so, you know, I see that happening in a, you know, especially with people like Elon Musk and some other really high profile people who are embracing different ways of being as well. I feel like the world's going to open up. I mean, that's my greatest hope, that we have these kids are going to be able to be supported, that they're going to be on the forefront of shaping the future because of the unique gifts they come in with. That is my greatest hope. That's what I'm pushing for. And I really hope to see some changes in education, you know, high school, middle school, high school, and even higher learning, so that these kids can be accommodated and learn the way that they best learn, so that they can really use all those gifts.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful for that too. I really am too. And the book is Differently Wired, Everyone: Raising an Exceptional Child in a Conventional World. Debbie, anything more that you want to say before we conclude here?
No, I mean, I just love talking about this stuff and so grateful for this conversation. And I would say, you know, whether you're raising a typical child or a neurotypical child, we are both kind of contributing to this paradigm that's keeping kids stuck. But if you're raising a neurotypical kid, and this is kind of outside, you know, your personal experience, just recognize that your kids are going to school with these children.
Yeah.
And you can help your kids understand what it means to be neurodiverse. You can help your kids be allies for differently wired children. You can keep your eye on inclusion things happening at your school and play a role in pushing those agendas forward. And then parents with differently wired kids, we also are contributing to this paradigm. And I'd say the more we can use our voice and speak out and be transparent about what's happening in our families and push for what we need, that's going to have to force changes to happen.
Yeah. Thank you so, so, so much for being here, everybody. There is a link, special link in the show notes over to Debbie's site about the book. And then also please go over and listen to her podcast, Tilt Parenting. Thank you so much for being here every week. I am so grateful that you choose to spend your time with me and my guests. And until next time, everybody, I will see you out in cyberspace. Bye-bye.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.